Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this peopleyoushouldmeet.com call called How to Channel Your First Book. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a short moment from now, we'll be welcoming our very special guest, Tom Evans. But before we do that, I just wanted to take a little bit of time up front to let you know how this call will work this evening. Now, we're going to be online for around about an hour this evening. And over the course of this hour, I'll be asking Tom a whole variety of different questions on our topic. Some of those questions will be my own, but the vast majority of the questions will actually come from the questions that were submitted through the People You Should Meet site before the call. Now, just to give you a little bit of background on Tom, I was first introduced to Tom through a very good friend of mine probably 4 or 5 months ago. And the thing that really sparked my interest, just in the way that my friend described Tom, was just his whole new approach to opening up creativity in people. And like, I'm someone who is absolutely fascinated by the whole creative process. And as soon as I heard that Tom was developing some new ideas in terms of helping people to access more of their intuitive gifts, more of their creative potential, I immediately got very interested indeed. And yeah, so I got in touch with Tom. We've been friends now for a little while, and he's doing quite remarkable work. And over the course of our friendship, I've also had the opportunity to go and experience Tom's workshops as well, and they are very, very powerful experiences, and they are bringing in this whole new creative way of working. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, Tom Evans. How are you doing there, Tom?
I'm doing great, Damien. Good to talk to you.
Now, I'm very, very excited about this topic today, and judging by the response of the people signing up as well, it is a very hot topic for people. Now, Tom, I'm just going to start you at the top. Now, for some people who've never actually heard of the concept of channeling, particularly with regards to creativity, I was just wondering if you could just begin by actually sharing what exactly channeling is and how can it actually help people become more creative?
Yeah, I must admit, thank you for that, Damien. I must admit, when I first, I didn't even know what the word channeling was till after I was doing it. And I assumed it was something like, channeling in your dear departed Aunt Maud or your grandfather or something like that. But, and so, you know, to be steered clear of for someone that was basically a bit of a techie geek. But what it really means is that outside, I mean, people like Carl Jung years and years ago described the collective unconscious and the idea that there's a collective mind, a cosmic mind, and that all our thoughts are recorded in, let's say, a holographic storage area. And what channeling really means is that you are connected into the sum of all knowledge of, it's not even just human existence, but it's of all life existence, past, present, and future. And one of the things that I do specifically for authors is a bit of a magical trick whereby I get authors to channel their future self. And the idea is that the future self actually knows the words you've not written yet, and sends them back to the present where you're just about to write them.
Wow.
That makes sense.
That's amazing. Yeah. And it was interesting that you said that it wasn't actually specifically related to humans. I remember just reading stories about the 100 monkeys and just how there were two separate islands and two different groups of monkeys, and they literally showed very similar behaviour patterns around eating a particular banana, and it was just something that couldn't have been actually transmuted because they were literally both groups of monkeys living on separate islands. But for somehow, maybe it's through this collective mind that you were talking about, this information was transmuted, and all of a sudden, the other monkeys on the other island started demonstrating very similar behavioural characteristics. So I was just wondering if you could go a little bit deeper into this whole notion of the collective mind and how it actually applies to creativity.
Yeah, well the sort of way it works is that time is we assume that time's an illusion to give us this experience of our reality. That, and if you think of the brain as being not, forget about, I'll talk about brain and mind a little bit later, but think about the brain as being a quantum transducer that can actually tap into the collective mind. And if you think about the mind being all life forms, so that's right up from, virus up to what we call the intelligent mind, which is us dolphins, cetaceans, and primates, and some say dogs, parrots, and horses, because they've chosen to live with us humans. Some say just pre to their next incarnation. But if you assume that we're a transducer and we can pick up on this collective mind, then you heard of Rupert Sheldrake and Morphic Resonance and what have you. I think he's the guy that postulated the 100, or gave some sense to the 100 monkey story. It basically means that if you close down on your conscious thinking, you know, your inner dialogue, your inner critic, then it's possible to get access to it. And what I've done is I've developed a set of techniques whereby you can tap into virtually unlimited creativity just by closing the conscious mind down slightly and opening it up to other thought forms coming in.
Great. That's very interesting. Now, I was just wondering, like, with regards to your own writing, Tom, how did you actually begin, like, channeling your writing? Is it something you've been working on since birth, or is it something that's a relatively new way of expressing your creative self?
Yeah, I've for the first 45 years of my life, I was basically a techie geek engineer type of person. But one thing I've always done since birth is I've always been quite inventive, and I've always wanted to know how things worked. And my writing journey started with not so much a near-death experience, but just after I got out of a shower with a tarantula in it. I was down in South Africa and turned around in the shower, and this huge spider was there. So I sort of got out quite slowly, called the called reception, got them to deal with this huge spider. And at the time, I was reading a book called The Phenomenon of Man by Teilhard de Chardin, and it occurred to me that the book was really quite difficult. It was written in 1955, but it predates people like James Lovelock and the Gaia Theory by some years. And I just had this blinding inspiration that this book needed to see the light of day again. And I was the person to do it. And rather than doing it in a sort of dry textbook fashion, that it would be great to see the light of day as a novel. So I started started mind mapping, got all the stationery out of the hotel room and mind mapped the whole book, and within about half an hour I had this novel mapped out, which I've literally just finished about 2.5 years later. But in the meantime, I've ended up writing two or three books, and I found that what I was writing I didn't know about. It was sort of given to me. So I started, this engineering me wanted to know what was going on, so I started to research how the hell this information had come in to me. And what I learned then was that I could actually teach other people to do this, and that it was a teachable and learnable skill.
Yeah, and you mentioned it was given to you. Can you tell me a little bit more about this whole process of being given this gift of this book?
Well, I'll give you a couple of examples, actually. Because I know some people say, well, how do you know whether it's your inner voice or an external voice? And the book that I started writing back then was it's a near dystopian future novel, and I needed Mars to be on the other side of the sun from the Earth on a date in the future. And I'd read this book on how you should go about writing and writing your first draft, and the idea is that you just sort of write it and make a note in the margin when you put dates in or facts that you need to corroborate, but just get on with writing the draft so you don't stop your creative flow. So I put this date, this arbitrary date in the future, when I'd like Mars to be on the other side of the Earth from the Sun, about 150 years from now. And about a week or so later, I went and found this online solar system, and I found you could wind the date to any point in the future, so you could see the relative position of the planets at any time. And lo and behold, the date I'd chosen completely randomly, Mars was exactly where I wanted it to be.
Wow.
And I thought, well, this is a bit weird. So what's going on here? You know, how have I found out this information that I obviously patently didn't know?
So that would have had your engineering mind running hot.
Absolutely. And then obviously one of the things you do is start to read more and more material, and you find that lots of other people are thinking about this too. And it all sort of boils down to the fact that our brains aren't just our brains, and they're not our minds. But our minds are comprised of many components, and one of which is a higher self, which works outside time. And if you think about people like Leonardo, who was drawing the helicopter years and years before the helicopters actually existed, and he had the prescience or prescience to invent the parachute just in case the helicopter stopped working. You had to ask, well, did he foresee the future, or did someone in the future send the message back to him, or was it was it maybe that all our incarnations are linked and we have access to ourselves in all our forms? And so when we keep this conscious mind suppressed, a great way of doing that, obviously, being through meditation, then we can allow these thoughts to come through.
Yeah, I'm actually someone who's very fascinated with the life of Leonardo da Vinci. And there's a great book actually by an author called Michael Gelb called How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci. And Michael Gelb actually said in that book that Leonardo was considered to be a genius in 35 different fields of endeavor, from the arts to the sciences, literally using both hemispheres of his brain. But just for anyone to be a genius in one field is considered to be an incredible human feat. But the fact that Leonardo was a genius in 35 different fields, it certainly sort of makes me wonder what kind of information source that he was tapping into. And I think with that example with the helicopter, I think it may have been 500 years before the helicopter was even built. So it's truly remarkable what he was tapping into.
Indeed, several people have done this down the edge, like Swedenborg and what have you. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's actually that people say that we only use 10% of our brains or whatever. But it's when the two hemispheres are synced that you actually really start to get into this field where you're not so much a master of all trades and jack of none, but you start to become a polymath. And I was diagnosed about 10 years ago of having no right brain function whatsoever.
Wow.
And an overactive left brain. So I started lots of, personal development to switch the right brain on. And I think that's this sort of latent potential that's sort of come out now.
Wow. So that was actually like a clinical diagnosis that you had no right brain function?
I did a course on kinesiology, and this lady was just amazing. She could just sort of tell what was going on, and she gave me this cross-crawling technique whereby you sort of swap your right knee over with your left arm or what have you. And at first, I couldn't do it. And when I managed to finally do it, I ended up writing backwards. You know,
wow.
Like some of it might have dyslexia. So obviously, the fluid started to move from one brain to the other. And you've probably heard that about the corpus collective, you know, the connection between the two hemispheres, and apparently Einstein's brain was just amazingly connected from right to left.
Yeah. Wow. And did it actually take you a long time to regain access to the right hemisphere?
Well, actually, I think the single most thing that gave me access to the right hemisphere was starting regular meditation. Because one of the problems with the left brain is it's cautious, it's analytical, it tells the potential author that, one, you haven't got time to write your book, and two, if you did write it, who would want to read it. So it protects you in a way, you know, and it sort of says, well, yeah, don't be silly. If you just keep to your humdrum job and keep your head down, no one's going to hurt you, and you'll be fine, and you'll pick up the pension when you're 65, and all right, you regret not writing that book, but you didn't have anyone laughing at you. So it's sort of protective. You can see it as a protector, but also it sort of stops the right brain coming through. And there's some phenomenal books. Betty Edwards has written the book Drawing with the Right Side of the Brain. I bet you've come across that one, but it's got a fantastic exercise in it where they give you a Van Gogh to copy. But what they do is they invert the picture and you draw it upside down. And then after you finish the picture, just copying it upside down, you turn it around and you feel like you've just drawn a Van Gogh, which is Van Gogh for our American friends. So it's a phenomenal procedure. But the modern-day version of that is mind mapping, which is just such a great technique. And what the map does is it allows the left brain thinks, okay, I've got a map, I've got some structure, you know, I can cope with that. I know about maps and what have you. So the left brain is kept busy with this sort of analytical map thing, and the right brain thinks, cool, now the left brain's busy, I'll sneak in and do my creative stuff.
I know you're a big fan of Tony Buzan and all his mind mapping technology. Is that something you'd recommend for most authors?
Well, I'll tell you, what I recommend for most authors is actually start out with pen and paper. Right? But two reasons. One, it's cheaper. And two, there's something about using the computer that can switch the left brain back on again. So unless you're fortunate enough to be able to use a computer in fully right brain mode, then I'd certainly recommend that you mind map initially. And there's a second reason for that as well, is that in terms of making something real, you have to fully manifest it into the physical realm. And if you're working on a computer, it's still in a sort of ethereal, on an ethereal basis. So what I do is I get people to mind map on paper for pretty much most of the course until they get into the point of detailed book structure and actually working on content and what have you. And we find that we get much better results from simple technology. And apart from anything else, you save yourself a few pounds.
Yeah. I actually remember hearing an interview with an incredibly famous copywriter who was of the old school frame, and literally the way he would write sales copy was literally with pen and paper. And any time he made a mistake, he would actually go right back to the top of the page and restart writing everything from scratch. And he just said the dexterity of touching the ink through the pen and touching the paper and really connecting with his subject matter actually made him write far better copy than when he was trying to type it in via the computer. So
Yeah, there's a sort of karmic significance to this as well, is that, you know, a lot of spiritual activity is can be a little bit, let's say, airy fairy or nebulous. But the whole point about us incarnating is to fully descend into the material plane, to fully experience, and then ascension and evolution can happen.
Okay, Tom, I'm just going to dip into our questions, and we've had questions come in from all over the world. And I'm just going to kick off actually with a question from Lorraine, and Lorraine is in Canada. And this is, I guess, it surrounds the whole process of getting into that book channeling mode. And Lorraine asks, is it necessary to go into a meditative state first?
I wouldn't say, well, there's so many levels of meditation, obviously. So in a deep meditative state, then I would say that you wouldn't be in a position where you would write necessarily, although you can write in that mode, and what you might write could be useful or maybe not. But what you need to do is to meditate regularly, and then when you're in writing mode, you don't go into a deep meditative state, but you change your mode of consciousness. And most of our of real consciousness, as we know it, is done in the neocortex, in the frontal lobes. And what you do is you move your consciousness to the center of the brain, into the pineal gland. So you're still fully awake, you're still fully aware, but you switch that that waking consciousness aspect off. So it's not what I call deep meditation, but you're certainly in sort of light trance. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. And was this something you just, like through your own writing journey, was it something that was immediately apparent to get into that, to access that part of the brain, or was it something that you had read about, or?
Well, it's something I've always done. You know when you have those light bulb moments where everything just sort of comes on at one time, you get the whole picture? And you know those times when you just don't know the flow of time? You know, for example, you might be driving home, and you just can't remember the journey, but you've just had an amazing time, you had amazing thoughts, perhaps you've been listening to some music, and you've performed a conscious brain function of actually driving that car and steering it home, avoiding all the other cars and what have you, and stopping at red lights and moving on green. But you've been thinking about something completely different. In a way, that state that you're in when you're writing is that you're physically typing away or using a pen and you're making a mark on paper, but you're tapped into something else. You're tapped into a mode where the words just flow, time just flows, you just don't know what, you're not aware of time. Mm. And that's pretty much because you've jumped out of time and you've jumped into being able to access other times.
Mm. That's a really lovely description, actually, Tom. I know, having been in the personal development arena for so long now, and just hearing so many people talk about their peak performance state, and literally in that state it is when, whether it's the athlete or whether it's could be like a high performer in business, where they just get so present to what it is that they're creating, that literally time ceases to exist in many ways. And to actually hear you describe that as a part of a creative process is something I can definitely relate to.
Yeah, and you actually end up stretching time as well to fit. So your productivity seems to take huge leaps forward too, as far as you just get amazing things done. But obviously to do this, we've got practical considerations as well, like emails and phones and this sort of thing, and just pressure of the day and the kids and partners and what have you. So when I do my writing, and what I recommend to all the authors is you've really got to find that time when you keep these distractions to a minimum and you really enjoy it. At first I thought I was being quite selfish about it, but it's real me time. And I remember when I first started writing, I took Fridays off, and actually I'd got hold of all my clients and said, look, you're not going to be able to get hold of me on Friday. And I was expecting some sort of moaning or what have you. And they were all really enthusiastic, and they said, Carl, what are you writing about? And they all knew me as a techie, so they thought I was writing some book about the internet. And when I told them I was writing a novel, it's just that phenomenal. And my standing in their eyes went up rather than down. And they really, really respected my writing time and my space. You know, no one would call on a Friday. No one would email on a Friday. And so I ended up with a four-day working week. I even adjusted my hourly rate so I could earn the same money in 4 days that I used to do in five, and no one seemed to moan about that as well, and that was long overdue. So I had to say that the whole transformation had benefits all round.
Mm. Great. That's amazing. So that's good for budding authors looking to find a bit of time in their daily schedule just to be able to just work things in a way that brings them creatively alive.
Yeah,
now, I've got a question here from Jay Medway in the United Kingdom. And Jay asks, does this work for fiction or for non-fiction or for both?
The answer is it's absolutely for both, although that the techniques you might use for fiction might, in terms of the actual process of writing, might be slightly different. But one of the things I really advocate is, especially in the mind, body, and spirit area, is that we're slightly awash with, you know, yet another self-development book or yet another another slant on an aspect of our spirituality or our humanity. But there's always space for another Paulo Coelho, so or Deepak Chopra. So one of the things I advocate is, even if you're writing a non-fiction book, you actually incorporate fictional elements such as metaphor and allegory. And the reason for this is, one, it's a bit more fun for the reader than reading, let's say, a dryish textbook. But one of the things you get from using metaphor and allegory is you bypass the conscious brain of the reader. So your point goes straight into the unconscious mind and into the higher self, and you can affect change in a much better way and get your points across in a much better way by using these sort of techniques. Obviously, the writing style would be completely different as well, and there's a different style for doing good fiction as opposed to doing good non-fiction. But essentially, I think there's a nice halfway house between the two.
Mm. Yeah, the fact you mentioned Paulo Coelho there, he's without doubt one of my favourite authors, and I just love in his book, The Alchemist, just how he actually just transmuted quite a lot of his life philosophy and how to approach going after your dreams, and just his use of storytelling to actually demonstrate that philosophical approach to living was just something that was just so rich and so vibrant. And literally the thing that I loved about it the most was that the fact it's so accessible as well. Like, you could be like a 10-year-old kid, you could pick up The Alchemist and still get like an incredibly rich reading experience. And also, say, for someone who's much further down their spiritual path or their awareness, they could actually pick up that book and read into it with a lot more awareness and insight. But the fact that he's written in a way through the whole use of storytelling and metaphor to reveal those concepts, I think is just, I guess, like the way he delivered it so simply as well just really is part of the genius of his writing style.
It is, and if you think about it, parables have been around for a long time. And then before we had the printing press, the only way to transmit information was through oral tradition or even pictorial tradition. If you think about systems like the tarot and what have you. And this was my approach when I started writing this novel. My incident with the tarantula gave me this leap of inspiration, where I had this huge pile of books on quantum physics and consciousness and evolution, and I realized that if I was to write another book like that, then I'd just be adding to this pile of books, and I could probably shed a new insight and a new. But actually, I wanted to get to a different audience, so I realized if I wrote this as a novel, then I'd actually be able to get it in front of people that would never go into the mind, body, and spirit section of a bookshop, or perhaps people that never got past the second chapter of A Brief History of Time. And this was really my aim from the outset. And I have to say that having now got to completion of the novel, having that as my intent, And my yardstick for all these things is my lovely partner, who would and she reads these things, and if I'm ever going to get it past her, I'm ever going to get it to a huge audience.
Great. Now we have a question from Kelly, and it sort of touches on a point we were talking about earlier on, mm-hmm. just with the chatter that goes on typically from the left hemisphere in terms of the inner critic. And mm-hmm. Kelly's actually in the UK. Uh-huh. And she asks, how can I shut up the mindless chatter and allow my creativity to shine through and form into a book?
That's it's an excellent question, and I have to say it's one of the things that we focus on the workshop that I run is also available as an online home study course. One of the visualizations that I've produced is called The Quantum Collapse of Thought, and it basically runs along this line, is that for the normal human mind, it's impossible to have a thought and think about it at the same time. And this is slightly aligned to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle and the idea that you can't know the velocity and momentum of an electron or any quanta at the same time. So if you think about it right now, if you think about what thought you're thinking about, and then you think about it, then the original thought disappears. And you can use this as a great way of learning how to meditate, but also as a way of exercising your mind into the other state. So, as I said before, regular meditation is really good practice for anyone that's working in the creative field. But that doesn't mean that you've got to sort of sit down in a lotus position and be quiet for 20 or 30 minutes every day. We've all got lives to lead, and there's so many different ways of meditating. You can meditate when you're out on a walk. You can meditate while you're ironing. You know, there's so many, and it's more a question of getting into the state where you are conscious of the difference between what Kelly mentioned as mindless chatter and other thoughts. And one of the things that I've uncovered is that the vast majority of thoughts and not your own, and it's just a question of knowing the difference.
And practice. Okay, great.
Yeah,
excellent. That's a good answer. And I was just wondering, just in terms of your own, like you were talking about, there's lots of different ways to get into that meditative state. And I was just wondering if you could share your own process, Tom, of actually allowing yourself to go into that space.
Well, one of the things I personally use a breath meditation technique. And it's loosely based on a Taoist tradition of on the in-breath, that's when inspiration comes in, and when the out-breath, because that then you're giving your thanks and appreciation back to the universe. And when you meditate on the breath, and there's so many ways of doing this, you can do that with just the in and out-breath. You can do it through breathing in through one nostril and out through another nostril, or you can do it by bringing energy up your spine on the outside, the top of your head, from and then on the inside back down to your coccyx and what have you. Just the very fact that you are thinking about something else other than your thoughts gives you that ability to really quieten your thoughts very quickly. And then if you use, on top of that, I tend to use a mantra, and the mantra tends to be focused on the outcome that I want to get from the meditation. And I guess within about 2 or 3 minutes, you can get into a pretty deep meditative state. But like anything else, like riding a bike, it needs practice before you can do it, and you've got to get it from that conscious competence to unconscious competence mode. But with practice, you can get there. But one of the things about meditation, like many other activities, is it's actually cheap and free, and we can all do it. And then when you're in that writing mode, as I said before, you just go into a lighter meditative state, which is like a light trance.
Great, that's a great answer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next question we have, Tom, is a question from R.A. in Qatar, and this is probably a question that most writers who have been on this journey for a while will have come up against at some time in their writing career, and I've certainly experienced it as well. But R.A. asks, how do you actually deal with writer's block?
Well, in my experience, writer's block, people that come to me to work with me as a writing coach, invariably they're running some other block somewhere else in their life. And one of the things that we do is we deal with that block elsewhere. And they all say, oh, it's writer's block, but it tends to be you find that the block is somewhere else in their lives. And what I find is that there's sort of three types of block, basically. The first type is just simply that your inspiration dries up. So let's say that you've got yourself into this mild meditative state, and you meditate regularly, and you can get yourself into this sort of this flowing mode of writing, but occasionally you dry up. Then it's just a question that you need to stop and take a breather, go for a walk, or do something different, and what have you. The next level of block is where you're writing away and life seems to get in the way. Something jumps up and, you know, either a client plays up on you, or there's some problem in the relationship, or you know, the kids are misbehaving or whatever. And these sort of blocks, they tend to be, in my experience, blocks where you can learn from the experience. So almost like the universe trying to teach you something. And if you see them as, okay, well, instead of this is a pain and it's stopping me writing, what can I learn from this? In some cases, it's even source material for the thing you're writing. And what the universe is saying, you know this thing you're writing about? Well, you know, if you take this as a perspective, then you can augment your writing. So that's the sort of second type of block. The third type of block is the one where you get really, really stuck. And the way I deal with this is that it's as if the universe has said, well, write a book, because in writing that book, it's going to expose things that you need to deal with in order to evolve. And for that, we tend to have to use some fairly, well, they're not really deep techniques, but they're more slightly more intensive, where I use timeline therapy, hypnosis, and sometimes even past life regression. And what we do is go and find out where that original block occurred, deal with it, bring the author back to the present, and not only does writer's block disappear, but you'll find that whatever was blocking them from writing was manifesting elsewhere in their life and stopping them getting on and doing things. So all in all, very cathartic process to go through.
It's a very powerful technique. And was that something, when you mentioned earlier on that you didn't have access to your right hemisphere of your brain, could you actually trace that back to an experience that interfered with your creative process, or was that something else?
Yeah, I must admit, I've transformed as a person. I was one of the things I'd do is I was a real master at being a busy fool. So, I could keep myself really busy. And what I did, I've always been a very inventive person. And that was really, I suppose, an early sign that I was tapped into something hopefully close to where Leonardo was. I've always been an inventor, and I've got several patents out, but always in the technology field. But what I do is I keep doing another invention and another invention. And I'd always make the next invention the reason why the last one wasn't a success. So I turned this capability into a real avoidance strategy. Yeah. So I ended up always being not quite as successful as I could be, and not quite achieving my full potential. And I always have a great excuse saying that, oh, this next invention is going to be much better than the old one, and what have you. So I had to go back and deal with this. And I went back to three or four lifetimes back, where I was an entrepreneur in Scotland, and I had a major business failure, and this thing was still with me, and I was still living this failure. And it was actually not so much that I was avoiding success; I was fearful of success because of associating success with stress. And once we dealt with that as a block, then I popped straight back to the future and ended up being more productive, completely painless, and a very joyful experience.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm.
That's great. Insight there. Now, the other thing I wanted to sort of touch on as well, I liked what you said earlier on about block number two, where life just gets in the way. And one of my favourite books on creativity is a book by a guy called Stephen Pressfield. And it's a book called The War of Art, and Pressfield actually talks about his own incredible battle with this thing called resistance. And I know for a lot of creatives, like as soon as they move into that space where they trying to create, whether it's writing or some other kind of art form, like a whole host of different episodes or dramas or things pop up into their life seemingly almost on call. To interfere with their creative process. And is resistance something you, now that you're aware of the whole channeling process, is that something you still experience as a writer?
Yeah, but as I said, when I see the resistance, then the first thing I do is I don't think, oh, poor me, and I've got this to deal with and it's going to stop me writing. My instant thought is, okay, what is this here to teach me? What can I learn from this? and perhaps it's actually really good source material. Or as I found out recently, an experience that came through to me actually was the seed of a whole new book.
Mm.
And thinking, well, actually, this is a great... And again, I took that idea, well, I could write a non-fiction book about this, which would be kind of good, and I can go into the theory of it and what have you. But I've taken the view from day one that I'm going to write this as fiction, because I'm going to get the learning to a wider audience. And
great.
As I said, to the unconscious brain of unconscious mind of the wider audience.
Great way to transfer it into something productive.
Yeah.
Excellent, cool. Now, we've got a question here from Roxy in the United States, and Roxy asks, how do you stay motivated and inspired to write every day?
Well, I guess, you know, you're talking about athletes, you know, how do they get up and, you know, these guys have just been winning, these ladies and guys have been winning Olympic gold. How do you get up at 4 o'clock every morning to go and swim and what have you? And for them, I guess they've got this, you know, winning a medal at the end of every, at the end of 4 years or whatever. But for a writer, you know, it's similarly difficult. How do you get up every day and do it? Well, in some ways it's slightly different, because you get real joy just from writing if you never ever think about being a published author, just because you're flexing your writing muscles. And I use a philosophy advocated by Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way. I don't know if you've heard that book. She advocates this thing called morning pages, and I do this religiously every single day. Every morning when I get up, the first thing I do for 20 minutes, half an hour, is just write. And it can be anything. It can just be tabulating my dreams, it can be my thoughts, it can be anything else. Or even write draft chapters of stuff that I'm working on. In fact, you know, I mentioned about the home study course visualizations that I've just put together. I wrote all of these in my morning pages. Incredibly productive. And I find that just that exercising my writing muscle every day, and it's a real writing muscle, using pen and paper, not using a computer to keep that whole left brain suppressed, really helps keeping that motivation going. I suppose the other thing that gets you inspired is when you publish work and then people send you reviews of stuff you've written, which is just amazing.
Yeah, no, I know a lot of creative people that have had phenomenal results in terms of really getting into their creative flow by just doing those morning pages, and literally they'll have their journal by the bed, and as soon as the sun comes up, bang, they're creating and writing and processing out their dreams, their thoughts, their concerns, their joys, and just using that as real creative fuel to really open up that channel.
Yeah, it's also important that when you ground things into physical reality like that, they have it, and the same with people's cosmic orders. You know, if you just think your cosmic order, or you type it on a computer, then it hasn't got as much chance of happening if you actually physically write it down using pen and paper. It's something about grounding it into reality that really seals it and frames it.
Yeah, it's a powerful distinction. Great. Now, we've got a question here from Kylie in the UK. And Kylie asks, how do you know whether it's you or your guide channeling your writing?
Well, that's a really, really, really good question. I think that the short answer is you don't. Because, you know, who's to know really what a guide is? And one of my... it's only a personal theory, is that if you think about, if you adhere to reincarnation, and that, you know, each time we come back we might evolve in some way or come back as something different or whatever, is that there might be a point in the future where you come back as a sufficiently advanced being that you learn how to send messages back to you in the past. So one of my pet theories is when you get inspiration and you get that sort of blinding light bulb moment, or in Leonardo's case, he got the idea of a helicopter. It it might have been a future Leonardo sending the message back to him in the past, so that 400 years later, the collective human wisdom could actually create the helicopter. So you think about this, and you'd be mad to ignore these flashes of inspiration. So you don't know what. Basically, you don't really know. But what I do know is that the type of message that comes back, the type of information that you get, like that example I got when I couldn't possibly have known where Mars was in relation to the Earth. It's just a different quality. It's either a different quality of information, so you couldn't possibly know it, or when you get experienced at knowing the difference between internal and external thought, you just know that the external thought has got a different quality to it, and you come across the eye accessing patterns in NLP. You know, the where the eye moves up and down to the left depending on your VAK. I've actually spotted in people different eye accessing patterns now when they're in internal thought mode from external thought. And once you spot this in others, you can actually see it, you sort of sense it in yourself.
Well, now, a question I have for you, Tom, about this whole notion of future self. And when I heard you initially describe it, I took it in context of actually like your future self in this lifetime. But have you also had experiences when you're working with clients where you actually take them into their future self in future lifetimes to actually open up that creative process?
Well, actually, let's do something a bit more concrete and practical now. I take people in the workshop and on the home study course, I take people to the future self that's a successful author. And I used to think, you heard of entanglement of quantum particles?
No, I haven't actually.
You take two small particles apart and you change the spin of one, then the spin of the other changes instantaneously at faster than the speed of light. And quantum physicists have been sort of playing with this at lot further and further distances. And that's at a sort of microscopic and the macroscopic layer, we're all connected to all instances of ourselves, past, present, and future. So as soon as you go out to the future and you install the affirmation that your book is successfully published and you bring people back to the present, then people, you're entangled basically with this future version of you that is a published author. And then if you're sensitive to all the coincidences and inspirations that happen throughout the day, then everything conspires to make you that successful author. And I've done this visualization called Future Entanglement that one, takes people back and dispels a few blocks, and two, then just seals that, creates that link, almost like you've got a thread between you in the present and you in the future, and a bit of elastic that's sort of pulling you towards each other.
Great. Now, just we're coming very close to the hour, Tom. I was just wondering if you had some, say if there's a creator or writer out there who's literally fascinated by this whole concept of channeling and would like to actually experience it, how would you actually recommend that they just kick that whole process off?
Well, the first thing I think I said throughout the call is that regular meditation is just, it was my switch really from being just someone that was inspirational to someone that was effectively channeling. So you've got to meditate regularly, but don't worry about, you know, the fact that it has to be this sort of classic yoga, lotus position meditation. It's just getting that me space. Regular writing using morning pages is really, really good. But also just setting that future intent. And the intent doesn't have to be per se that about your book and what it's going to be about. It just has to be that you're going to write a book, and then that book is going to create a certain amount of transformation. Not in the world, but just in yourself or in your close family or your friends or your business colleagues or whatever. It's really, really important that you set high intent about the journey you're just about to go on. And this is true whether you're involved in any project, whether it's creating a book or a website or painting the house or whatever. You know, you've got to, you know, it's the reason you're doing it that makes it become successful. And armed with those, and I think the beauty is it is that simple. You don't need to do anything really, really complicated.
Cool. Excellent. Now, Tom, I have no doubt that there are people on this call that would love to actually connect further with your work and actually step even more fully into their power as writers and potentially connect with this creative force of the collective mind and the collective unconscious. And I was just wondering, like, I know that you have a very powerful workshop because I've actually been on it myself, and I've also had the opportunity to connect with your some of the meditations that you've created as well to accessing that creative flow. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people how they can deepen their journey with you.
Sure. Well, the first way is absolutely free. I've got a blog site, which is thebookwright.com, and bookwright spelled like playwright. And instead of the word play, I've got the word book, and write is W-R-I-G-H-T.com. So there's a blog there with loads of tips, loads of ideas, loads of links to other resources. I've just created the online version of the workshop, so we can take this message out to a much wider audience, and that's available. I think you might be putting a link up later on. And what I've done is it's available at three levels of price, and there's a really good offer at the moment where anyone that's on the call can buy a much cheaper price. And then finally, I've got the next workshops in Guildford, southeast of England, in the 20th and 21st of October. And what I've done, these workshops, I limit the number of people on them, so everybody learns how to, and experiences how to channel. I channel in information for each author. So I limit the numbers to 12. And I've got five places available at heavily discounted prices, normally $297. Plus that, and if you first five people to sign up on the website, you can get it for $197 plus that. And I'm also available to mentor people personally, and a lot of people that come to me just want to deal with that blockage first. So we deal with the block first, and guess what? Not only do they clear the block for let's say writing, but you find that some of the blocks gone in their life as well, and they just become much more productive and happy.
Wow. And say in terms of the people that have been on your workshops or the have actually come to you for coaching, what kind of results have they experienced? Like you mentioned that they could access that channel a lot more, and that can actually affect other areas of their lives. But I was just wondering if you had any people have, like, maybe a specific story of someone having a real breakthrough. Maybe they felt they weren't creative, and all of a sudden they've tapped into this potential that they weren't aware of.
Yeah, I've got one lady who came to the workshop in February this year, and when she arrived, she wouldn't say boo to the goose, and really unconfident about her writing abilities. And she's gone from February this year to just in August writing a 70,000-word novel. I've just read the first draft of it, and I have to say that it's of the, I personally think it's a similar quality to something like Paulo Coelho's written. We're just at the moment submitting that into a couple of literary agents, and everyone that's read it just says it's just blown them away. It's a novel that sort of covers it's if you've ever read anything like something like Sepulchre by Kate Moss, this has got about three intertwined lives and deals with all sorts of issues like reincarnation, time travel, interconnectedness and what have you, and it's just so magical. And this from a lady who basically just wouldn't write, you know. And
wow.
She's done it all for us.
Wow, that's amazing. Excellent, Tom. Now, I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you so much for sharing your expertise and I guess also the stories of your own journey in terms of just going from someone who literally had no access to their right hemisphere of their brain to really immersing yourself and fully connecting with your own creativity, and also just stepping into that place where you not only did you untap that creative potential in yourself, but how you're also now stepping out into the world and sharing all the things that you've gathered on your way and helping other people do the same. And I just wanted to acknowledge you for actually taking that journey and even stepping more fully into it as you develop. And I know, just in closing the call, Tom, you are just about to head off on holidays, and we were talking earlier on about a couple of your writing projects that are coming up, and I was just wondering if you could share with people, first of all, the exciting writing projects that you're currently working on, and also if you had any final words of advice for aspiring writers.
Well, one thing we've not touched on at all is that it's actually easier than ever to get published nowadays. And so the first thing is a lot of the people that come on the workshop, I teach them about electronic publishing and getting e-books out and what have you. Now, people think about e-books as being a PDF that you download and then print out. And to me, if you do that, you're not doing the genre very much justice, because to me an ebook can be so many things. It can be a video, it can be an audio book, it can be an autoresponder sequence, it can be an e-learning course and what have you. And nowadays we've got the internet at our disposal, we've got DIY publishing, print-on-demand publishing, we've got the ability for zero cost to set up a blog, and each blog entry can be a chapter. I know someone that did a blog and got a £10,000 advance based on blogging in, I think, 5 or 6 chapters of a book. So there's no reason nowadays not to get out there and to write and get your stuff up. And so if I can give everyone just one tip, it's just write every day, write those morning pages, set up a blog, and you know, then you become a published author. And actually, that lady I talked about, I mentioned that she'd written 70,000. She wrote 4 chapters of her book as a blog, and that gave her the confidence to finish the book off when she got great reviews from friends and family. So
wow.
The advice is get out there and do it.
Yeah. I can certainly wholeheartedly endorse just using blogging as a tool to actually just kick off that creative process and start sharing your ideas and then communicating with an audience.
It's electronic morning pages, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I guess we're talking before the call, Tom, how we're just in such a privileged time in the history of mankind to have literally all these incredible technological advancements that enable us to communicate with our fellow man, like, regardless of where they're on the globe, and across all sorts of different formats, whether it's the spoken word, the written word, the visual dynamics of video. We are really in a very privileged time in the history of mankind for people that are creatively inclined and want to share a message.
The link I sent you earlier to 100 Years of Ermintrude, that was my first channeled book. First one I was aware of channeling. Is that something you could share with everyone on the...
amazing. Like, literally just connected with the book before the call. But just the presentation of that book, just combining the story of in the written format, but then also having it orated and backed to, like, an incredible piece of music as well. It was just very, very engaging and uplifting, and... Just sharing a book in that format is really quite amazing. And I do recommend people check that out, and it will certainly open up your imagination for sharing your ideas and bringing it to a bigger audience.
And a different way of bringing a book into publishing. And I didn't tell you this, Damon, but I made more revenue from the downloads of the e-version that I've made from the printed version of that book.
Wow. Some good inspiration for...
When you think about margins, I don't know if you'll know this, but when you sell a book in a bookshop, you might be lucky to make a dollar from a book. As it happened, I gave all the revenues away to breast cancer charity, because that's what we touched on in the book. But the principle is that no trees were harmed in the making of that book, and it got out to a much wider audience as a non-printed book.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mm. And just in closing, Tom, just see if you could share your upcoming creative projects from a personal point of view.
Well, the main thing I've done is I've actually taken the whole workshop and made that into an e-book, which has just been a phenomenal exercise from my perspective. So, again, it's a way of taking these learnings out to the to a wider audience. And I'm just translating a textbook, an old esoteric textbook, which is about 20-odd chapters long, and I'm translating that into being a book, a fiction book. And what I'm doing is I'm using, I didn't mention about dreaming, I read a chapter every night. I then ask my unconscious mind to ask my higher self to give me the insights. I then dream the fictional chapter, and I wake up in the morning and I write the chapter. And I set myself up the next 21 days, I'm going to have the first draft of this book using about 8 hours of sleep that we don't normally use. So it's sort of fairly advanced technique, but simple nevertheless. And that's my next project. So I've got my big novel coming out in the new year, and I'm going to have this other new novel using this new technique, following it fairly shortly behind that. And again, both fiction to get they're based on non-fiction, but they're going to come out as fiction to get the message out to a wider audience.
Yeah, well, sounds very, very exciting, Tom. And yeah, I just
and fun,
which is the most important.
Let's not forget about fun. This is not serious stuff. It's fun. It's enjoyable.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I certainly wish you the very best with your own writing journey, Tom. And I know that we'll keep in contact, and I'll certainly keep a very close eye on how all your writing unfolds. And also, all the best with helping people bring out their creative selves. And yeah, just thanks for taking the time to share your wisdom, and thank you to everyone who has participated on this call. It is an inspiring conversation that we get to share each Thursday night. And just so you know, if you have listened to this call and you want to listen back to it, it will be made available through the peopleyoushouldmeet.com website first thing tomorrow morning. And you can also download a whole stream of different other inspiring interviews as well to help you access more of your potential. But thank you everyone for participating, and thank you, Tom.
That's been my honour and my pleasure. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Damien.
My pleasure. Okay, good night, everyone.
Good night.